Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel. Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Here we go, everybody. Welcome to not just another episode of The Suspendables, but it's our 50th anniversary. It's our 50th show. I'm Jungle Jim Jerome. He's Russ Cortinel down there. And to celebrate our 50th show, he's put himself in the confines of the beautiful Cortinel House in Sherwood. And let me do this and see if you can guess who it is, okay? For the intro. Okay? I've got an intro. Well, what do you say about this guy? Here it is, okay? Give me 10 seconds. He's a father. He's a father-in-law, father of five. He's a grandfather. He takes his coffee with a little bit of milk, does yoga, rides a bike, but it's got a motor in it once in a while. Okay? He can sing. He's been known to watch curling. He's a mean gin rummy player, but his mother-in-law kicks his ass every once in a while. He's a size 9.5 shoe. He watched the entire series, The Crown. Solid single-digit handicap. Bit of a history buff. If you give him food, make it Italian. The most nervous he's ever been is playing the AT&T Pro-Am. He loves to dance, but says he's not very good at it. Ladies and gentlemen, Wayne Gretzky. Did you guess that, Gretz?
Great intro. Jimmy, I'm a little better at cards than that. She's got more experience about playing cards than I do, Jimmy.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, it's a pleasure to be here, and congratulations to both you and Russ on 49 previous episodes. I know you guys are doing a wonderful job, because everywhere I go, people tell me that they listen to you guys all day long. Obviously, nobody's working right now, so it's a good time to have a podcast.
Yeah.
Everybody's giving you high praises, so I know Russ is carrying you. Good for you guys.
Well, you've got, obviously, thanks, this is a very proud moment for you, doing The Suspendables. But
I couldn't sleep last night.
Yeah. Nor could Jim. Jim, you didn't sleep a wink last night.
I haven't slept since Monday, okay? Never mind. I'm still, you know, I've known Gretz. It's like our 50th show anniversary. Gretz, I was looking at a thing you autographed for me, and I've known you 35 years. So this is our 35th anniversary. And so I don't know what to... Oh, there you go. Speaking of anniversaries, this is a daily one for Russ. Speaking of interviews, Gretz, you know, you've done thousands, obviously, and I've never known you to ever get mad. I've never known you to ever be nervous, but I recall you phoning me going, Jimmy, did I do the right thing? I've agreed to do an interview with Howard Stern.
Yeah.
And you went ahead and did it, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, first of all, playing in New York and living in New York, you come to realize that although it's a big city, it's a small city, and he was a huge presence in the city, tremendous following. But at that point in time, he was a little bit outside of the box. It wasn't your typical sort of, how you doing, how's the team playing, how do you feel for next game? It was going to be a lot more than that. And I knew that going in, but I always figured, all right, you know what? I live in a locker room with 25 guys every day, and it's about as ugly as you can imagine in a locker room. Right. But it stays in the locker room. So I was a little bit nervous and a little bit tense. I did the interview. He couldn't have been nicer. He was Howard Stern. What I found really interesting, he was so the opposite away from the microphone. I got a chance. Janet and I ran into him a couple times at dinner in Manhattan. He was obviously a huge presence, but he was a tremendous family man and extremely intelligent, obviously. He didn't know a lot about hockey, but I really enjoyed doing the show. I'm glad I did it, and I'm proud of the fact that that's something I can tell people. You know what? One of the people who changed history in the broadcasting world is Howard Stern, and I'm glad I got a chance to do his show.
Yeah. When you say you didn't know anything about hockey, I like the title you've always given me. It was Jimmy Drone's been around more hockey than you know and knows nothing about hockey.
Well, it's amazing because, Jimmy, people don't know this because they know you're around the hockey guys and Russ is on your show. And we've been friends over the years and you obviously good friends with Kevin Lowe and Mark and Paul Coffey. And you're about the only guy I know in Canada that can't skate and has made a lot of money around hockey. So we're all trying to figure it out. But it's strange when you hear of someone that really didn't grow up playing hockey and you really didn't do that. You were...
No, I didn't.
That wasn't your forte.
The Jeromes used ice in their drinks.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That was about the extent of it. You know, we got, I guess COVID, we should address this. You know, Gretz, it's you've been in L.A. You haven't been able to travel. You travel a ton. What I don't understand, Gretz, about this thing, to get right to the guts of it, is the commissioner now has come out and Bill Daly has come out and said, okay, we're going to try and do hockey, Gretz. Yeah. And I just can't see how are they possibly going to pull off hockey with restrictions, Gretz. I don't get it.
I don't know either. Nobody seems to know. I did a show with Steve Nash, and we were talking about basketball. I did a show the other day with Drew Brees, and we were talking about football coming back. Dustin has just played a skins game with Rory McIlroy and Matt Wolf, a young man from Westlake here, and Ricky Fowler. And, you know, I would think that maybe the individual sports like tennis and golf might have a little bit of a leg up, but nobody seems to know. This is a whole new world, and people have been devastated by this, not only with deaths, but not being able to see their loved ones when they're passing, not being able to go to cemeteries for the burial, to pay their respects. It's just, it hasn't been something that we've ever seen in our lifetime. But I will say that when you start talking about hockey and football and basketball, you can see people smile a little bit that, okay, maybe there's something there we can watch on TV. Maybe there's something that'll entice us. Maybe there's something that'll put a smile on our face because it's so, and some people have had it way worse than others, but it's been devastating. So hopefully, God willing, and following the proper guides of the doctors in Canada and the doctors in the United States, we can put a foot forward and we can get started here. We need to be able to smile again. People have been locked up for 6, 7, 8 weeks. And like I said, a lot of people have had it tougher than others. People have lost loved ones. And on the other side of it, 36 million people in the United States have lost jobs. And whoa, that's pretty remarkable when you think about it. And we have a long way to go back. But hopefully, God willing, we're all headed in the right direction. And there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. You've always said, Gret, sports, even away from your own sport of hockey, when you bring this up, you've always said sports is way bigger than fans just watching sports. But it's a real galvanizing thing for people. And you've always sort of talked about that. And does it surprise you that the talk about things getting back to normal has been sports first before anything else?
I think it's something for us to talk about, first of all. And I think that most people, and I know our household, and I know Russ's, you sit around and you're watching football, you're watching golf. Sunday afternoon, you want to see who's going to win the Masters. The Stanley Cup Finals, we want to see who's going to lift the trophy. There's a level of amusement that comes with that. So people gravitate to that. Not everyone loves sports, but the people who do, it's a sense of enjoyment. Sometimes it can be frustration, but it's an opportunity to think outside the box and forget about your pressures of everyday life, whether it's your kids or your family or your job. And I think that's where sports is so really positive for people. And so most kids grow up playing soccer or lacrosse or track and field, ice hockey, and their parents are there and they watch it and it's their enjoyment. So they watch their kids, they get home, they're able to watch pros on TV. And I think to a certain extent, most people are missing that. And that's something we all look forward to watching. And it sort of caps off our week when you can sit down and watch that basketball game or that Super Bowl or that curling championship, that Bonsfield. That,
you know, 100%.
People love that.
Yeah, you know, hockey, I mean, you're a father. Your kids grew up, you know, interesting enough, your daughter Emma's a tennis player.
Right.
Your son Tristan's on his way to give golf a crack, and he's really good. I've played with him. your son Ty's in the business world now, the hockey schools, mm-hmm. and Trevor's doing some acting and stuff. You had always said, Gretz, that because people ask, I see it all the time with asking questions about whether your kids, whether you talk to your kids about playing hockey or whether you push them towards that. And I remember you telling me as a father when you went there, because I've always said parents are, my kids were never in hockey, and I thought I would be one of these parents I hate that, freaking out about training my kid. And you've always said kids who are hockey players that in the summers that they should do anything but play hockey.
Yeah. I know I'm probably not the number one sort of person for Hockey Canada, because I think they would like to see kids play all year round. And I'm not a big believer in that. And Russ and I kind of live close to each other, and his kids were all raised in a sense that they're all part of sports, track and field, soccer, hockey. My kids were a little bit more diverse in a sense that one played football, one played baseball, one was a golfer, one is tennis. And so it becomes a part of your life. And I don't think at a young age you should put all your eggs sort of into one basket. The age of 11, 12, you should get out and experience playing other sports, whether it's baseball, hockey, track and field, lacrosse, golf. All these things, I think, go a long way in helping you as you grow older and at the age of 15, 16, choose that path that you want to follow. And I'm a really big believer in that. I really think that my track and field and my baseball and my box lacrosse were all beneficial to me becoming the hockey player I became, because not only did each one of those sports help me become a better player, but I was really excited at the end of April to start baseball and lacrosse and track and field. But by September, I was ecstatic to get back to hockey. And so I never got tired of it. And I always had a passion for it. And so I think that's why playing every sport you can is only beneficial.
Makes you a better athlete. Wayne and I always have talked about, how we should raise our kids. And I bounce stuff off Wayne over the years. And he's been a big brother to me and helped me in a lot of ways. But I truly believe what Wayne's saying is that the kids need to play more sports. I'll never forget, Lawton had two buddies over. They were probably 11 or 12 great hockey players, but they couldn't catch they couldn't catch a ball. And you should have seen them trying to throw shoot baskets for basketball.
Oh, no.
I mean, it was like these
like
are
Jimmy two, skating.
These were our two best players on our all-star team, and they looked like they lived in a library.
Gretz, you played some basketball. Someone told me the other. I said, I know.
Oh, not very good. I played high school basketball, and it was so funny because my forte in hockey, I'm known as a passer, playmaker. I was the biggest hog in basketball. My friends used to say, oh my God, if I got the ball, I was doing everything I could to shoot. I was a complete opposite, and I'd be like 2 for 25. But I would shoot from everywhere, Jimmy.
I've got a Gretz basketball story. So
all right.
When Wayne and I were playing, probably in the early 90s, I didn't live too far from him in Hollywood Hills, and he was playing for the Kings, and I was probably playing for Minnesota or Dallas or something. And so we used to play 3-on-3 yeah. basketball with Gary Jones,
yeah.
and it was awesome, and Kimbo and yeah. whatever celebrity was
Nels,
in the neighborhood.
Nels would come over. Yeah. Shaq played one
Shaq.
Day.
So Gretz would say, come on over, we're going to play 3-on-3. And I am the worst basketball player. I'm like one of those kids I just described. That's the only sport I probably, that and football, I didn't play growing up. So I would go, okay, I'll come over. So I was the last pick on the, you know, 3-on-3. And so we're up, and I don't know if Gretz has a great memory, but we'll see if he remembers this one. So Kimbo and I and Gary are up 9. We played to 10. So we're up 9-1. And we started trash talking Gretz. We lost 10-9. It was like, boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, when Gretz says, oh, I wasn't very good, I don't know. I don't know what not very good means. But
those were fun games because in the off season, Russ and I would train with this guy, Billy Blanks, who became really famous for Ty Bo.
Sure. Yeah.
And Paris and Janet and Russ and I would go down there, and then in the afternoons we'd play 3-on-3 from 4 to 6.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'd have 9 guys show up, some guys 12, some days just 6. But yeah, we'd play for 2 to 2.5 hours every day. It was a great workout. We had a lot of fun, and kept us in shape. And wow, it was just always it was always a fun game.
Right. Gretz, you bring up your other sports. People know that you, and I think this is true. Did you not go to a training camp with the Blue Jays one summer or spring?
No. So back in those days, Canada wasn't part of the Major League Baseball draft lottery. So if you were a Canadian, you were not eligible for the draft. Any team could sign you. And so it's 17, I guess. The Toronto Blue Jays offered me a contract. Paul Beeston was the president, I believe, at the time, general manager. Mm-hmm. And they offered me a $100,000 signing bonus. And I remember thinking, all right, that's good, I'll take it. And my dad said, no, you're going back to grade 11. My baseball career was over, Jimmy.
Damn.
But I ran into Wade Boggs one time, and he was playing third base, I believe, at Winston-Salem. And somehow the Blue Jays, that was going to be their rookie team. And that's where I probably would have been. And he was being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame one day. And I was there for my son Trevor's baseball tournament. And he was so excited to get inducted that night. And I remember I said to him, well, Wade, it's a good thing I didn't sign in baseball or you wouldn't be here today. Of course, he laughed at me. So my baseball career, as good as I thought I was, I would never have probably got to that level. But I could have risen the ranks a little bit. But I will tell you this, I had just as much love for baseball as I did for hockey. I just wasn't quite as good at baseball as I was at hockey.
In all those summers, Gretz, when you, obviously that advice you've always said, anything you hear from you about advice for kids or something is something you learned from your dad. Did you ever have a summer job, Gretz? Did you ever do any?
Oh, yeah. So when I was a kid, I would say to my dad, should I get a job? We didn't have a lot of money. We were a normal family, and he would tell me no every year. When I turned 16 in April, I remember I said to my dad, should I get a job? And he said, yeah, you should. I remember thinking, wow.
Not drag.
Yeah, great idea. So he got me a job. And my job for the summer was I pulled gravel off the back of a truck and I threw it into the holes on the streets. And then a guy would pour tar over the gravel to fix the holes in the roads, right?
Yeah.
And I worked from 7 a.m. to 4:30, Monday through Friday, for 9 weeks.
Jesus.
And I remember the whole time thinking, gosh, why can't I be the guy just holding the tar hose? How do I get that job? Yeah. But I remember thinking, you know what? I understand why my dad had me work at that point in time, because I put a realization in that I was going to really put forth my education and really work even that much harder at my hockey career. And so my dad was pretty smart, ahead of his time in some ways. He didn't want me working as a kid because he felt like you have your whole life to work. but at a point in time where it was going to mean something to me, he said, all right, get out there. And I was so excited. I made $4.55 an hour, which I thought was really big money back then.
Probably was.
You could go to McDonald's for a dollar. So I was living the life of Riley.
Jim, can you imagine if you had that signed shovel right now, how much you'd get? One of one.
Correct. There's nothing like getting a guy to want to go back to playing hockey than shoveling gravel, man.
You must. And then what do they call it? The foreman? The foreman?
Yeah, yeah.
The guy, he didn't like me, so he was always hard on me, and I used to just take it and say, all right, whatever.
Well, people don't know how funny you are, because we were in Vancouver for the Olympics, of course, and you said, Jimmy, let's get over there for the gold medal game. Kevin Martin's playing, and we went and watched the curling, and we sat there, and you were, you know, you looked out, and... I said, do you think you could curl? And you said, I could be the skip.
I'm a smart man, Jimmy.
I remember that.
No, yeah. But, you know, 98, when we went to Nagano, everybody was worried, the hockey players, because we were probably the group that was making the most money. So everybody was worried it's an amateur sport and they're going to take over the village and... You know, the curlers, the skaters, the skiers, how's everybody going to get along? And we had so much fun in 98 from guys like Brendan Shanahan to Iserman and Marty Brodeur and Al McGinnis. It was so special. It was like being in bantam hockey again, where you got billeted with other people. So we really rallied around being in the village, and we really... I think the hockey guys ended up having way more fun than anybody else. And I think people were surprised at how well we fit into the whole group. And that's what made, for me, that's what made the Olympics exciting. And I say to Dustin all the time, who gets invited to play in the Olympic Games, I always say to him, if you're going to go, if you do it, make sure you stay in the village, because that's the best part of the Olympics.
You know, you bring up Dustin and... Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of the greatest golfers in the world. He like you, interesting enough, when I like I said at the top, I've never known you to be nervous. I've never known you to get mad.
Yeah.
And if someone said, who has those qualities, outside of hockey, you'd say Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
Your relationship with him, Gretz, he's playing the best golf he's ever played. He's knocked on the door of the Masters and a couple U.S. Opens, and, of course, he won the Open. And we got to see you in the clubhouse one day when he was waiting for, a playoff or a rain mm-hmm. delay or something, and you were shooting the shit with him about what's coming up for him. And what kind of conversation, Gretz, the two athletes who are the best at their sport ever talk about?
Yeah, I can probably say this with a great deal of confidence, that Russ and his relationship with Allie's boyfriend, who is an all-pro, great football player, you know, one of the best in the business, similar to that of Dustin in his sport. When we're together, we talk about everything but. And I don't want to put words in Russ's mouth, but I know everybody wants to talk to him about golf. Everybody wants to ask him questions. How do I become better? What do I need to do for putting or driving?
Right.
And so I really, him and I don't talk a lot about golf, other than our mindset is, to talk about everything else but the actual sport. And so my relationship with him is very unique. I never want... People say, do you give him advice? I don't give him advice. What am I going to tell one of the greatest golfers in the world today? What advice am I going to give him? I mean, really, it'd be like him trying to advise me how to play hockey. Or you. Although you tried to for years. We talk about everything but. Janet is really his mentor in that sense. And not that they talk about the game, but she's the one who really in puts it in his mind, Dustin, you can win. This, he can be 8 shots back and she'll call him Sunday morning and say, listen, you can win today. You can still do this. And he loves hearing that because she's so positive, and she's the one person that can get a hold of him before he gets on that first tee, because he really takes to heart what she says, because she means it from the bottom of her heart, comes from a great place. And so she's, as his mom and dad are, one of his biggest fans, and yet he also believes it's nice for him to hear her say that, because that reinforces him, look, I can win today. So she is more on the lines of doing that stuff, and I'm more on the lines of, all right, where are we going to have dinner after you play today?
It's funny that Gretz brought that up, because Eric Kendricks, obviously Allie's boyfriend, we've been having Sunday suppers, and we've gone the last 2 years for Christmas, and when he's off, Paris and I are like, I know Paris said a couple times, should we turn the football game on, whatever game's on, like Monday Night Football or something, and he's like, the last thing I want to see right now is football.
Right.
Because these guys that, you know, they're just on. And when they're off, they're off. And they want to relax. They want to get away, as we all did when we played. But now we're older. And it's fun to watch these two young guys be, you know, just be who they are. And Dustin's such a wonderful kid. And so is Eric. And Wayne and I get to share in both their careers, yeah, so it's great.
It's fun.
It is fun.
I'll tell you a funny story, Jimmy. You love golf. We were all at the U.S. Open in Seattle. Obviously, it wasn't the ending that we'd all hoped for.
Yeah.
We went from winning the tournament to tying the tournament to losing the tournament in about 3 minutes. So it was devastating. It was tough. But we went from there. Idaho, where we summer, is only a 20-minute flight. We were flying over to Idaho. I called a bunch of friends, and I said, get in the restaurant. Make sure everybody's in there when we come in. We'll have dinner and sit around and chat. Just pump them up. So Holly was there, and Brendan Morrow, and Russ, and Guy Carboneau. it was right. A good group of hockey guys and a bunch of other friends. So we'd been there for the whole week, and of course we're not golfing, and so once we get to Idaho, we're excited about golfing. And so four or five of us said, we're going to play at 8 in the morning, and Dustin said, I'm going to play, and I said, oh yeah, whatever.
Right.
him playing with us would be like us losing game 7 and the Stanley Cup final and playing hockey with you and a bunch of friends, Jimmy,
the next day.
It wouldn't be too much fun.
8 a.m. No.
So I didn't shake him. I went down there. We were so excited. We're on the first tee. Play the first hole. The second hole is a long par 5, and we're on the green, and I look back, and I see this guy in the middle of the fairway. He's got about 225 yards in on this par 5, and he hits a 6-iron about 5 feet, right? And he's got no shoes on. He's barefoot, and he's in the cart by himself, and I said to my buddy, okay, when he gets here, he's going to say to you, is that good? I said, if I say anything, it won't go over well. But if you say, well, I've seen guys miss this putt.
No.
So my buddy said, awesome. Sure enough, he comes walking up. I said, I can't believe you're up playing. He goes, next word is that good? My buddy said, well, I've seen guys miss this putt. He said, oh, is that the way it's going to be? He made the putt. But the funny part of the story was, I knew he would win eventually a major championship. He played 21 straight days in a row with us. And you can't replace love and passion for what you're doing. I think we all would have been devastated at losing and how hard and difficult it was that he had it in his hands. And then he had at least a tie. And in those days, you played 18 more holes. And so it was difficult, but he rebounded. He bounced back, played amazing in Pittsburgh to win the U.S. Open a year later. But I knew those 3 weeks when he played every single day, I said, wow, good things are going to happen. And you got to love what you do, and he does.
Yeah. Both you and Russ have said, before that. I've never known you to be nervous. However, I've seen two things you that just drive you around the bend. One is you can't. We went to watch Emma play in a tennis tournament, and you. And I was with you, and you were saying, I can't watch. I just, it's so nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
And the other one was you had phoned me on the Wednesday or Thursday of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, because you play with Dustin. And I remember you phoned me going, I've never been so nervous in my life being out there. You just said it was, I mean, it was a great experience, but you said, I was just totally uncomfortable being out with these guys when they're playing for dough, you know?
First of all, I'm lucky enough each year to play with Dustin, and we really do have a lot of fun. And I hope in a lot of ways I help him relax out there, because I truly just enjoy it. I'm having fun. I am what I am as a player. I try my best. But the reality is, when you play with Dustin and you play with Jordan Spieth and Jake Owen, and we've played together 5 years in a row, they're going to have a huge following. So when you get on that first hole at Pebble Beach and there's 30,000 people on the first hole and they all line the fairway like Dustin's hitting or Jordan's hitting, you just go, oh my goodness, I could miss this ball. Yeah. I'm not this good. And it becomes harder for a professional athlete who's golfing, because people think in their minds, oh, he's an athlete, he can play golf. So if you're an actor or a singer or a businessman, they go, well, you know, whatever.
Right.
But if you're a baseball player, a football player, a hockey player, the mindset for people or fans is, my goodness, he should be a good golfer. So I worry that I'm going to hurt somebody.
Right.
I worry I'm going to hit somebody.
Right.
And that's always my biggest fear. And then my other biggest fear is that Jordan and Dustin are both so nice, and they're just so gracious to both Jake and I, that I don't want to get in their way. Like, they'll line up our putts, they'll mark our balls, they'll, you know, tell us how far we got. And I'm like, don't worry about what I'm doing. It really doesn't matter. So I'm more concerned about what them worrying about me. But all in all, it's just really, I've been so fortunate to be part of that event.
Yes.
And I'm no different than any other parent. If your kid's playing any sport, you worry for them, right? You don't want them to be disappointed. You don't want them to leave there going, oh my God, I'm no good, or
right.
I'm not. You want them to be happy, right? So that's why we worry as parents. It's not, who's going to remember who won a soccer match at the age of 12 or a tennis match at 14? But you want your kids to walk away from there going, well, I had the greatest day of my life. And that's why you're nervous. More about that than the actual winning.
Jim and I have talked about Gretz when we first went to Halifax for your first golf tournament.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on the way back, we've talked about, you know, you telling the story of the 5,000 people that were following just the four of you. Brett Hull, Mario, and Mike Weir.
Yeah.
And the story, the seven-hour flight you and I took back with Jimmy and the sports reporter that was on the plane, and you saying, all I wanted to do was get in the crowd, sign autographs, and keep going. I couldn't watch because I'm a much higher handicap than Wayne, and I was so freaking nervous for him. I was like, I can't watch this. If he hits a freaking slice or a pull hook, he's gonna kill somebody. And I was like, I took Mike McPhee, my old teammate from Montreal. I said, Mike, I can't watch. Let's go somewhere. He goes, okay. We went to the bar and we drank. And I was so worried about Gretz or somebody else.
Well,
I was sweating watching him. It's awful.
I was telling a story the other day about that event, and the two things I remember vividly. One was Mike Weir got in a little bit late for the dinner. And, of course, you know, hockey players, we always and things up our sleeves. And so we're sitting around, and I think it was Russ that might have suggested, he's got a concussion, we should put in a wake-up call every hour so he doesn't get sick. So we went to the front desk, and we told the lady that, listen, when Mr. Weir checks in, he's got a really bad concussion. You need to call him and wake him every hour. We're scared that he might not wake up.
The best.
And then if he stops answering the phone, you're going to have to go up and knock on his door. So Mike, by 6 a.m., was so mad. And he'd just come from a tournament 4 days and, you know, travel, and he was tired. And he got to the first tee, and he hit his first tee ball out of bounds.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then the second part of it was, Steve Rich was caddying for Mario, and we took these 25-pound sandbags, and we put two of them in Mario's golf bag. And we were walking up the first hole, and Steve Rich was sweating like you've never seen.
Like a horse.
Yeah. And he finally turns to Mario, and he says, "What do you got in this bag?" We had to get him another shirt because he had soaked right through his shirt.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, Nova Scotia was hot, but there's no humidity.
Right.
He was drenched. So anyway, then the tournament ended. And we're in Nova Scotia, and you can get some of the greatest lobster in the world, right, Jimmy?
Absolutely.
So we decided to fly out of Nova Scotia to L.A., and we had to land in Boston so Russ could get lobster.
Yeah. That's clever, Russ.
True
yeah.
story.
Yeah.
To this day, I've always wondered, now, why didn't we just pick it up in Nova Scotia? But I guess they told us you can't bring it across the border. So next thing I know, we're stopping in Boston and we're getting lobster to bring back to L.A.
Most expensive lobster ever.
So anyway, it was a fun deal. It was a great event. And Mike Weir was a true sport. He was tired and really a little bit upset. Yeah. I think he even got his clubs lost, right? He had to borrow a set of clubs. Somebody hid them or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I know they did because you were the guy who hid them. I remember that.
That was the night Harry Neal told the story about Thomas Gradin. We've talked about this story on the show where he's all excited about Thomas Gradin playing in Vancouver. So he's telling Mario and Brad and Gretz and all of us the story. And then he says after the first game, Harry is so excited to have the superstar from Europe on his team. And he turns after the Canadian national anthem first game in Vancouver and says, "I hate that song. We always lose when that comes."
You can't write that.
Oh, my God. There were so many good stories that night. Oh, we sat in the banquet room in Halifax and everybody just took... it was one of the best nights ever.
Yeah, it was nice to... Bell Harbor, what was it called again?
Bell Bay.
Bell Bay. Yeah. People were so nice.
Oh, my gosh.
Everybody there was incredible. It really was, one of the great weekends ever. It was really enjoyable. People couldn't have been nicer. And the hospitality, the food.
Yeah.
You know, that's the one thing when we play, we train 2 hours a day and we eat. Like we've trained 2 hours a day, but when you retire, you still keep eating the same way.
Right.
So early on in your life, when you're retired life, you got to learn real quickly. You can't eat the same way you did when you were playing.
Yeah, I remember Gretz during that event. Those were my blurry days, as I say, back in my...
Jimmy, we remember them vividly.
Yeah, and Gretz always said, you know, if the room was going flat, you know, he'd point to me and go, "Jimmy, get up there and tell a joke or something, or do something. You know, this thing's, no one's got anything to say." And then Gretz, I remember when I thought would be a good idea was at the dinner, there was a canoe at the front of the stage. I was pretty deep. I was about 7 rusty nails deep. And there was a canoe rusty at the front of the stage full of ice and about, you know, 200 beers, right? One of the local breweries that sponsored the thing. And I thought it would be a good idea to jump into the canoe and river dance with a bunch of glass bottles around.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And Gretz said, "Well, I didn't mean quite to go that far. Maybe a joke would have worked." Gretz, you bring up your buddy. I remember that event, and I saw you online this week wishing Mike Weir a happy 50th. For an athlete who plays professional golf, there's not a bigger day, man. When your career winds down as a PGA player, you get to turn 50 and play in the senior event. And Mike Weir was part of that deal. And I met your buddy Holly. I mean, is just an anomaly, right, this guy. And I remember that crowd when you said they pinched in the first hole, and you were talking earlier about hitting a guy, and you turned to me and go, "Jimmy, I can't hit this. I can't hit this. This is..."
Yeah.
And Holly goes, "I can," you know, and steps up there and just rips a shot.
Yeah.
What a guy he is, Gretz. And he's become a best friend of yours over those years.
Well, there's only one Brett Hull.
Oh.
100% you know, about that.
He's a remarkable man. I said this about the two guys in the Hall of Fame that I admire so much. Anybody who goes in the Hall of Fame is really special. But Mark Howe and Brett Hall, to be sons of the two of the greatest players who ever lived is so much pressure and so demanding. For them to fight through all that and excel and still become Hall of Fame players and as good as they were, I know myself how much pressure there is, so I don't think people realize the enormous amount of pressure on those two players. So from that point of view, I always thought of that. And then secondly, I always give him a hard time because, you know, if you see Brett Hall and you see his quotes and you see his interviews, he's always complaining, right? Like he's always, it's never perfect. Like life is never perfect.
Right.
But when I played with him, he was the first guy at the arena.
Yeah.
He was the first guy on the ice in practice. He was the first guy in every drill. And the hardest working guy I think I ever played with. And I used to say to him, Hully, why do you sound like you hate hockey so much? Wow, that's just me. So he's really a unique individual. And I really, he's just a good person who would do anything for anyone. And yeah, he has a really unique style and presence about himself. But believe me when I tell you, I don't think there's anybody I ever played with that cared more or practiced harder than Brett Hull. And that's why I admired him so much. And as a person, if you have an issue or you have a problem, if you make a call to Brett Hull, he would do anything to help any one of his friends. And so that's why we as people, we as players, we as people who know him, always respected Brett Hull, and that's why we all like him so much. And he's right. A fun guy to be around. He's just a good person.
I didn't know that about Hully until my brother, who played with Hully and then Gretz, told me about his work ethic and how much he loved hockey and stuff, because I was on that side of, we played at the exact same time. Yeah. I thought that this guy just showed up to the rink and he was a gifted goal scorer and didn't care. Yeah. And it's so far not from true. The truth. He's there hanging out with the trainers and he wants everybody to be better.
Yeah.
And his approach can be hard on some people, but
he'd be the perfect guy for the last skate.
Yeah. But Brett Hull is honest and truthful, and he's got a big heart, and he's a great human being, and what a hockey player. And over the years at Gaza Ranch, I've got to know Hully so much better. And you know, the first question out of his mouth is like, how's the family doing? How's the kids? And he asks about everybody.
He's the best.
But he's honest. So if you don't like honesty.
Well, he doesn't like something, he'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, everyone wants celebrities and athletes to be transparent. And he said, okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, I'm your guy.
Yeah. Gretz, you bring up the Hall of Fame. I've had well over 100 questions here that people want to ask you. And one of them was pretty interesting because Russ and I have had a debate about this, about what qualifies you to get into the Hall of Fame. And people do you have to win a Stanley Cup? Do you have to get so many points? I said they should have a grinder section, you know, for guys who played a fourth line. And Russ said, no, they shouldn't. what do you think, Gretz, should qualify? Are you happy with what gets guys in the Hall of Fame, or what's your take on that?
Jimmy, I know this isn't your question because you got me on the spot. I don't have an answer for you. Listen, I don't know what's right or wrong. Do you have to win a Stanley Cup to be in the Hall of Fame? Probably not. Should you be part of a Stanley Cup champion to be in the Hall of Fame? Probably. I think all in all, the Hockey Hall of Fame does as good a job as we can do to get the right people in. My only complaint, and I've had this conversation with people over the years, and I've been a little bit more vocal in the last 6 or 7 months, is that Vladislav Tretiak never played a game in the NHL. Was he one of the greatest goalies who ever played? Absolutely, 100%. Does he deserve to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame? 100%. But Paul Henderson was our guy. Paul Henderson changed history in Canada in the Summit Series in 72. Did he have numbers in the NHL to be in the Hall of Fame? Maybe not. But what he did was so unique and so special in international hockey for our country I believe Paul Henderson should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So that's me. That's my opinion. Some people believe it's a yes. Some people believe it's a no. But I'm a proud Canadian. And what he did for our country, nobody will ever match. My dad always said, when you do it first, it always lasts forever. And Paul Henderson, to me, is the guy that's not in the Hall of Fame that should be in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. Well said.
Russ, you're not going to be in then. All right.
No, you're wrong there. I am in the Hall of Fame. When they got rid of the Forum in Montreal, they took the locker room out and they put it in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So my stall's in there.
That's pretty good. Jimmy, that's pretty good.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. Gretch, you bring up your dad with that advice he said about if you're the first to do something. I know your dad is, he's doing okay. Gretz declining a little bit. I've been at your house at 42 Variety.
Yeah.
And people always inquire about this, but I was shocked. I've spent lots of time there with you, and you said, wait till you see what happens here over the next hour when we got up on a Saturday morning. And every 10 minutes, people are, and they don't believe this, Gretz, but people are knocking at your father's door, literally.
Literally. And, you know, he's so nice. One time, I will tell you a great story. One time I came home and I walked in. I always surprise my dad when I come home because he tells everybody if I'm coming home. And so I don't really get quiet moments with him. So one time I walked into the house and there's this guy lying on the couch. And I walk in, I look at the guy, and I kind of know who comes in and out. And I said to my dad, who's that guy? And he goes, oh, that's Paul from Newfoundland. I go, well, who's he? He goes, well, he's hitchhiking across the country. He had nowhere to stay, so I let him sleep over tonight. Nowhere to lie. And I just said, oh, my Lord. When my mom was alive, she would keep it in sort of perspective. She would let kids come in, and they'd go downstairs and put jerseys on and that sort of thing. But my dad, he's just so... fun-loving. He loves
the
people.
Greatest.
Yeah, he loves people to come over. We went home. They were doing a statue at the local rink where I grew up playing of our family. So everybody knew I was going to be in town. So I called my brother Brent, who's a police officer. I said, listen, put two unmarked cars at the house, one front of the house and one on the other side of the house.
Right.
I said, just make sure, you know, we get some time alone at home. Well, sure enough, my dad says to me about 12 hours into being there, geez, I don't know where everybody is. Nobody's coming around the house. Because we were stopping people. I didn't have the heart to tell my dad, well, we're blocking people. So he just loves people coming by. That's his life. That's who he is. And he'll never change.
Yeah. He's so cool. Over the years that we've been together, you and me and him, I mean, one of the funniest things ever was we were at a restaurant in Edmonton, and they were serving fondue, Russ, and you know, the right, and Wayne and I are sitting beside Walter, and Walter goes, I'm starving, Wayne, I'm starving, when's the food going to come out? And they lay down the raw meat, you know, to boil in the oil, and Gretz elbows me and goes, watch this, and Walter fires into the raw meat and puts it in his mouth and starts,
oh,
goes,
no,
do you remember that, Gretz? And he goes, it's a little chewy, Wayne.
Yeah. And then he goes, well, what is this? I said, Dad, you got to cook it yourself. He said, why didn't we stay home and cook?
and photographs, Gretz, he used to carry around if we take a picture.
Oh, yeah. He every All-Star game, every player and their parents would come to me. Back in those days, we'd have a Monday night charity dinner and then Tuesday the game. And Monday night, my dad would take pictures of all the players and their wives and parents. And inevitably, every year they would come up to my dad, and my dad would have his tux on, and he'd have about an 8-inch thing in his pocket of pictures. And he'd go, here's yours, Mr. Babich.
Yeah.
Here's yours, Mr. Coffee. Here's yours. I mean, they would go right to him, and they knew he would have those pictures. So that was his thing. He loved it.
I don't know, Gretz, if I've ever told you the story, but during the Gretzky tour we went on and during the lockout in Europe, was that 94, 95? 94. 94.
November 94.
99 All-Stars, right?
There we go.
So Paris couldn't come, and, you know, you could bring your spouse or whatever. So I brought a friend, Brian Turner. And anyways, during the days, I would go for a walk with Walter and George, his best
right.
his best friend, right?
Charlie.
Charlie.
It's like George, but it's Charlie.
Yeah, sorry. So Charlie. Well, we would walk through these old towns in Europe and talk. And I just love Walter. And I lost my dad at 13, and so I just wanted to go hang out with Walter and just talk to him. And so we'd talk and walk around, look at the sites, and he was starting to remember things, like when you came out to Victoria and went fishing with the $6 Million Man and Jeff.
Yeah.
And I talked to him about that because he had had his aneurysm in '91, and things were coming back to him on these walks. And so, like, every day I'm like, "Hey, Walter, want to go for a walk?" And we talk, and he would say, "Oh, I forgot about that. I remember. Yeah, now I remember. I remember." And so it was so cool for me to just reminisce with Walter, walk around and hear him remember things that he had forgotten about and Canada Cup and that we played together in.
He wears his Canada Cup ring. He's so proud of it. That's his sort of go-to. It makes him feel very comfortable.
Yeah.
You know I'm a crier, Gretz.
No.
Yeah, I'm a crier. I'm a crier. Yeah,
you know. Well, that's why you have a cat.
Yeah. You did this commercial, and I end up weeping like a child recently over the last few months.
Oh.
With your dad.
Yeah.
I believe it was Tim Hortons you did the ad for. I had heard, Gretz, that they wanted to have a stand-in for your father, and you stepped in and said no, because your dad has Parkinson's, which people know now, and you said no about that.
Well, Tim Hortons was really worried about my dad. They didn't want him working too long of a day. We'd been there for a few hours, and they said, you know, we can have somebody, and we can Photoshop it or whatever you want to call it, videotape somebody carrying the box over. And both my brother Glenn and I decided, look, you can't do that. People know my dad has Parkinson's. Plus, my dad would be disappointed if he got replaced his mind.
Right.
So we sort of said, look, let's change the shooting of the commercial, do him, because we want to make it authentic. We want to show people that it's really my dad. It was his autograph. He was the one who got it. He was the one who kept it. And we didn't want somebody else carrying the autograph, right? And they were coming from a really good place. They meant well.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we wanted to make sure it was about my dad, because that's the basis of Canada and the commercial, is that it's real. He didn't do it to make money off the autograph. He did it to enhance his son's life, and that's why my mom and dad took me there.
Yeah. Speaking of enhancing my life, I mean, you've done so many great things for me over the years. It's incredible. It changed my life. And you were the guy who told Russ, you got to invite Jimmy out to the Courtnell Classic, the charity event in Victoria. And then you said, Jimmy, come and join this group that I'm playing golf with. And it was you, it was Kiefer Sutherland, and it was Kid Rock. It was just the most incredible experience of my life. Kid Rock is like no one I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
That was a hell of a weekend we had out there, Gretz.
So, over the years, you know, you have a lot of great memories, right? And playing hockey has changed my life. I've got to see the world and meet so many great people. I had an opportunity to win a Stanley Cup with Jeff in Edmonton. And Russ and I, on a really good team, got to the semifinals. Unfortunately, we had 8 or 9 key injuries. I'm not saying we could have won, but with a different circumstances, we had an opportunity. Maybe Russ and I would have won a cup. And so I got to know Russ and Jeff really well. And so they invited me to this charity event for mental illness in Victoria. As always, they did everything first class. We were getting on this airplane, and like everyone else, I was so excited.
Yeah.
All these different people were getting on the plane, and Kid Rock, and at that time he just married Pamela Anderson.
Right.
And they sat down with Janet and I. We flew up there, and he was all into architecture, and he's a really smart man. He's probably one of the better businessmen who is in the entertainment world that I've ever met. And he was reading Architectural Digest, and he was really involved in things he was going to do in the future, but he didn't play golf. And so we're on the second hole, and he came out in jeans and a white tank T-shirt.
Tank top.
Yeah, on the second hole. And he goes, geez, maybe I'll try this game. So he plays one hole with us, and we're like, yeah, it's all in fun. Yeah. So we're at the Victoria Country Club. He plays one hole. The manager comes over to me and says, Wayne? I go, yeah. He said, you have to tell that guy he can't play in a tank top. This is the Victoria Country Club.
Right.
And I looked at the guy and he said, this is not my tournament. And I said, you tell him. So he says, oh, it's okay then. Yeah. I said, all right. So we got Kid Rock into golf. It was a great event. We had a lot of fun. We raised a lot of money. A lot of good people there. And, you know, mental illness doesn't get the financial backing and insurance policies and support. And obviously in this day and age, it's way more prevalent in the minds of people. And back in those days, when Russ and Jeff's father had to go through what he went through, we weren't aware of stuff like that. So we had a great time. It was a wonderful event, and we really enjoyed ourselves.
And we have Kid Rock now as a golf fanatic.
Yeah. Well, I remember showing up at the big dinner, and I said, I want to meet Pamela Anderson. I want to meet Kid Rock. I was sitting at your table, Gretz, and it was in the Empress Hotel there. And I said, where's Kid Rock? You know, and BC was the first province to not allow smoking anywhere. And I said, where is he? And he went, he's right over there at the table. It looks like they're electing a pope as he's smoking a cigar.
I would tell you, it's funny. He's kind of like Brett Hull.
Yeah.
The image you think of him is not him. Just, he's a really wonderful guy that does so much for charity, as Brett does. Just a nice person. Yeah. And I always call him Robert, so yeah. we always get a kick out of the fact that I never call him Kid Rock, because everybody says Kid or Kid Rock or Kid. I just always say, hey, Robert. So that's my nickname for him.
He was the first, he bought the first auction item that night and then went on to the after party and played for like 2 hours.
Yeah, he's incredible.
And he came up to Jeff and I and he said, look, my cousin committed suicide. I get nice. What you guys are doing, and I want to help out.
Yeah, that's
and
nice.
It was, and we didn't ask him to do anything. He came with Pam as a guest.
Yeah.
And Wayne said, if you get Kid Rock there, watch out. He's amazing. Because you had met him at Chili's event or something in Detroit. And he was saying that if he comes, you'll be so impressed with this guy. He's brilliant. And Kid Rock was amazing. And I'll tell one Kid Rock story. On the Sunday, we throw a barbecue for all the celebrities and key corporate sponsors of this event. And then they all fly back home to most people were flying back to L.A. And there was
we're getting on Russ's jet.
Yeah, I wish. And actually, Mrs. Thompson's jet. And we had a band there. And a hockey player, I'm going to remember his name, his daughter was 6 or 7 years old, went up to Kid Rock at the barbecue one in the afternoon and said, Mr. Rock, I know all the words to your song. And he said, which song? And it was that duet that he sang with
Sheryl Crow.
So they went up on stage and they sang the song. And instead of saying, fueling up on cocaine and whiskey, he said, I'm fueling up on Kool-Aid and cookies.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he changed the words to his own song because he was, you know, with this little girl. And I think you won a cup with that guy. Frick, what's his name?
I don't know, but I won a member guest with Kid Rock.
There you go.
Did you really?
Where?
Yeah, 22 handicap, and he had a hybrid 138 yards, and I made birdie.
No way.
Unbelievable.
Sherwood. Sherwood?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
No, wonderful guy. He really is a good guy.
His kid's the best.
Well, this was great, Gretz. I didn't know how this was going to go. And
that's fine. So people really don't know you. They know you. They think you're funny. They're not sure you're funny. Russ is carrying you.
Yeah.
Honestly, you probably have a lot of Canadian listeners, and I don't think people realize that you actually grew up in the Parliament buildings and how important your dad was to Canada. That maybe you can say a few words about that.
Well, my favorite story, my dad was the Speaker of the House. He was a federal member of Parliament for Sudbury, and every hockey player knows Sudbury. And so we moved to Ottawa when he became Speaker. And so I did. I was a, what they call a hill baby. I grew up on Parliament Hill. And my dad, one of his closest mentors was Jean Chrétien, who was, you know, Prime Minister and Finance Minister. And you were in town in Ottawa for the World Championships, I think, the training camp.
We were there for an event, and then we're getting ready to go get the bid for Vancouver 2003 in Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Right. And so first of all, you know, when you won the gold medal in Salt Lake, you phoned me, and we were doing a show, and you jumped on air, and we did this incredible interview before you even had the anthem, and then you were doing this bid with Chrétien, and so we go golfing at the Hunt Club in Ottawa, and you and I are going to play. I think Mario was there, was going to play with us, and of course I was the big draw between the three of you. And
big hat, no cattle.
We're on the tee, Russ, and words are sweeps around the club that not only was Wayne Gretzky there, but Jean Chrétien is there, and Chrétien comes flying over to the tee. And as only Gretz could do it, you know, he's so nice and so loyal. And Gretz says, "Hey, Wayne, how are you? Good to see you. You're going to play golf with me." And I back away right away. And Gretz goes, no, I got Jerome today. We're good to go. And I'm like, no. You know, and then he comes running at us out there. And I'll play, join you guys now. No, we got four, Jean. So, and I'm going, Gretz, you can't flick this guy all the time. He's the prime minister. He goes, no, I got lots of time with him. And then at the end of the round, he's in the restaurant, and Gretz and I are sitting there, and Chrétien says, "You know, what are you up to, Wayne?" He says, "Well, Jimmy's going to take his Wayne's kids were there, and my kids were in Ottawa." And Wayne said, "Well, Jimmy's going to take us to the House of Commons on a tour." And Chrétien said, "Well, are you sure? You know, you don't want me?" I said, and Gretz said, no, we're good to go. And he said, okay, well, have a good time, and we'll talk to you later, right?
It was a Sunday.
Yeah, it was a Sunday. And when Chrétien walked away, and I said, "Wayne, you could do that." He goes, no. I said, he's not going to be there. And Wayne said, no, he's going to be there. I said, no, he won't. He's not going to be. He said he won't. You know, he goes, "I'm telling you, he's going to be there." So we go into the House of Commons. We go with the kids.
No, let me interrupt. We have a tour guard. Right, and the tour guide's walking my kids. My kids are American. They're going, okay, where are we?
Yeah,
and we're with other kids who are Canadian. They're so excited, and the tour guide's walking us through. And Jimmy says to the kid 5 minutes in, "Listen, I grew up here. Can I take over the tour?" And the kid goes, "Yeah, no problem." So Jimmy's going, "My brother and I play ball hockey in this hallway. We're doing this. We used to hide from my mom and dad over here." No, all this stuff, right?
Yes.
And sure enough, we come around the corner, and these three RCMP guys stop us, and they're like, "Jimmy, Wayne, the Prime Minister's here. He wants to take over the tour." And I turn to the tour guide, and I say, "Is this okay?" And he goes, this just keeps getting better every minute. The tour guide, he's now handing up dollar bills to go on the tour. The tour guide's going, "I can't believe this. This is the greatest day of my life." And the Prime Minister.
Great stuff. Wayne, we really appreciate this. This was fantastic.
No, it was good. And you hang in there, all right? Golf is coming back.
Yeah.
Are you playing golf up there, Jimmy?
Everyone else is but me. Alberta was the first ones to open golf courses, so yeah.
I heard that.
It's not quite working out like they wanted to, because you have to stay six holes away from each other and play alone. So I don't think...
Hey, so you'd be perfect.
Yes.
Your slice. Where are you? I'm on number six.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
At least I can cheat. Thanks a lot, Wayne. We'll talk to you later. Thank you, Rusty. This is great.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in LA. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.